Now, we've come to a series of judgments against the heathen nations. Now, Jeremiah has concluded his preaching to the Israelites. He's not preaching, going to have another word for them. He now points out that all the nations are going to be destroyed, these political nations. And he then did enumerate as many of them as Isaiah mentioned 10 of them in his cluster. Jeremiah only mentioned 5 or 6. But the first one is the Philistines. And you remember that the Philistines were on the southwest coast of Palestine. I guess we kind of get this better for with a little map here.
And the Philistines occupied this area right around here on the Philistines. And over here is Moab. Moab comes in between this river here and the river up here.
Here's Moab here.
We mentioned Ammon is up here. Here's Ammon up here. And then I'll get to that now, but later. All right, now we'll go look at these two today. And what is our lesson? I want us to note what the charges were against Moab. And remember that Moab now is a heathen nation, pagan nation. And so God judges a heathen nation then, and he'll judge one today. But the first of the Philistines, the word of Jehovah that came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the Philistines before that Pharaoh smote Gaza. We don't know what time this was, because we don't know when he smoked Gaza. But at any rate, these Philistines had been enemies of the Jews ever since they came into the land. Remember the first
enemies were Philistines.
And how the David slew Goliath, they were in battle with him, and Saul fought against the Philistines, tracked all of his life of the king. And left for David finding the confidence. But now then we're down about
many years later than David.
Thus saith Jehovah, behold, waters rise up out of the north and shall become an overflowing stream and shall overflow the land and all that is therein, the city and them that dwell therein, and the men shall cry and all the inhabitants of the land shall wail. Of course, this is symbolic. The water there will be the Babylonians.
Babylonians
as an overflowing flood.
Overflow the banks of the river and flow down to the south and overflow the land.
So it's simply a metaphor that he's using here to describe the destruction by the Babylonians. That'll be here to the north, way up to the north there. At the noise of the stamping of the hoofs of the strong ones, at the rushing of the chariots, at the rumbling of his wheels, the fathers look not back to their children for feebleness of hands. That is, when the bills start coming, the fathers leave and try to save themselves because they can't do anything for the family. They'll know that. Looks like cowardice, but maybe it wasn't, but they'll be leaving the land anyway. They'll be leaving behind.
Because of the day that cometh to destroy all the Philistines, to cut off from
Tyre of Cape Tor. Now, Cape Tor is thought to be the island of Crete. And the island of Crete was west up in the
halfway to Rome.
And it's thought that the Philistines came in there from Cape Tor. Now, there were some Philistines in the land when Abraham was in the land, but later on another group came in, and it was that later group that gave the Jews so much trouble. He moves on from that, and Cape Tor, when Tyre and Sidon were to the north. So not only will he get the Philistines to the south, but also he'll get these up here to the north, Tyre, up here at Sidon, now about that. In other words, what he's pointing out is that when the
the Babylonians come in, why, they will overrun the land. Later on, Babylon didn't get all of it. The Tyre had a little island. There was a little island just off about a quarter of half a mile here. And here was that fortress was out here. Nebuchadnezzar made it take that. That was left for Alexander the Great, about 325 or something like that, or 30. When he came into the land, he built a causeway out there, and he took the fort and destroyed it. So Nebuchadnezzar didn't quite take it, but he did take the mainland city. He destroyed the city on the mainland. Well, he moves on. Besides, he's come under Gaza. Ashkelon is brought to the north. These are cities of the Philistines. Not brought to north, the remnant of their valley. How long wilt thou cut thyself? That was a pagan way of showing their penitence toward their God. They cut themselves. God forbade his people from doing that. The Jew were not supposed to do that. O thou sword of Jehovah, how long will it be ere thou be quiet? Put up thyself into thy scabbard, rest and be still. How canst thou be quiet, seeing Jehovah had given thee a charge, that is to the people there, against Ashkelon and against the seashore, there hath he appointed it. Now, the point I want you to get on out of that is this. The Babylonians were Jehovah's sword. Now, that's pointed out especially in Ezekiel, and I believe also in one of the earlier writers there. But Ezekiel especially dealt with the nation as the sword, his sword. All right, so what does that teach us? That tells us that one nation God uses to destroy another nation is God's sword. It's a sword in God's hand. God uses one nation to destroy another. Now he's going to use the Babylonians to come in and destroy the Philistines, or overrun Moab, carry away Judah into captivity. Babylon is Jehovah's sword. Now the same principle is true today. When God is determined to destroy a nation, he uses one nation as his sword to do that. And so every nation is in the hands of God. God controls in all of them. He's the king of the nations. Oh, thou king of the nations, said Jeremiah back down earlier, remember in the 10th chapter, I believe it was. Right? So now then, so he'll use Babylon to overthrow and destroy I destroy the Philistines. Right now, I move from them over to Moab here and tells about the destruction now of Moab. Now this is quite lengthy. There's a rather long chapter here to deal with it. Now I'm going to read it because I want you to note the details concerning Moab that led God to destroy. Why did he destroy Moab? Well, he tells us in here. Right? Of Moab. So now the next thing is Moab. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, the God of Israel, woe unto Nebo, for it is laid waste. That's probably Mount Nebo. Also there was a god by the name of Nebo. So Mount Nebo, from which Moses viewed the promised land, is mentioned here. You'll overrun it, it'll take it. Woe unto Nebo, for it is laid waste. Kerithaim is put to shame, it is taken. Mizgab is put to shame and broken down. Praise of Moab is no more. In Heshbon, they have devised evil against her. Come and let us cut her off from being a nation. All of these different towns, you know, we've tried to locate them. We're not interested in all that. It'd be interesting if you had an atlas and wanted to look them up and see where they are. But I'm not going to try to locate them. Heshbon was, I will mention it, it was east of the north end of the Dead Sea. All right? Let us cut her off from being a nation. Thou also, O madman, shall be brought to silence. The sword shall pursue thee. Another city. The sound of a cry from Horonaim. Desolation and great destruction. Moab is destroyed. Her little ones have caused a cry to be heard. For by the ascent of Luhith, with continual weeping, shall they go up, for at the descent of Horonaim, they have heard the distress of the cry of destruction. Now these are hills, cities, that will be destroyed. Now you'll hear the cry of the people there, the cry out because of the destruction. In fact, it's going to be so terrible that both Isaiah and Jeremiah said, we weep for Moab. They even caused them to sympathize with them, though they knew it was a just judgment. Flee, save your lives, and be like the heath in the wilderness. That is, get out where there's nobody. Heath is a plant, sort of a desert plant. Get out into that. For because thou hast trusted in thy works and in thy treasures, thou also shalt be taken, and Chemosh, that's their god, shall go forth into captivity, his priests and his princes together. Now notice that verse 7, for because thou trusted in thy works. In other words, they felt self-sufficiency. They were always against the Jewish God. They worshiped Chemosh. Chemosh would fail them. Because they trusted in themselves, their own works, brought ruin. Well, what does that tell us? That all things are in the hands of God. Now, when a nation becomes so arrogant and so mighty that it doesn't need God, self-sufficient within itself, that nation is headed for a judgment. This nation, I want you to see this nation in the light of what we're studying in these kingdoms back there. What brought them to destruction are the same things that will bring us to destruction, and which are bringing us to destruction even at the present time. I think we realize that, see that. Well, because thou hast trusted in thy works and in thy treasures, thou also shall be taken, and Chemosh shall go forth into captivity, carry your God into captivity. Well, a God that can't protect itself is no God, because there's no God but Jehovah, and he doesn't need anybody's protection. He controls all things, his priests and his princes together. And the destroyer, that be the Babylonians, shall come upon every city, and no city shall escape. The valley also shall perish, and the plain shall be destroyed. As Jehovah has spoken. Now God had decreed this, going to be destroyed just as God said it would be. That's the point we want to get. Right? And God doesn't change. When men follow the same pattern that these heathen nations followed, they're going to suffer the same consequence and the same judgment from God that the other nations suffered. A fellow sent me a book. He wanted me to read it. It's a little bit too deep for me, but the book is dealing with God. God is the creator, and his power is inherent in the fact that he's the creator of all things. If he can create, he can control as the God of that which he creates. And it's a good thought, and it's a true thought that is correct. Now, notice we're moving on now from that point there. Now, verse 9, give wings unto Moab, that she may fly and get her away, and her cities shall become a desolation, without any to dwell therein. Give her wings to get away from this all. Of course, that's just, you can do that, but the idea is, what she will need is wings to flee from the presence of this enemy that's coming. Now notice this, cursed be he that doeth the work of Jehovah negligently, and cursed be he that keepeth back his sword from blood. All right, now when God decrees a nation to be his instrument of judgment. Cursed is that nation that doesn't execute the judgment of God. But I think I like that idea. It applies to all of life. Cursed is he that doeth the work of Jehovah negligently. That applies to us as it would a nation that God's using. God's using a nation and pronouncing a curse upon it if it does its work negligently. And I when I read this, I think about that war we had a couple of years ago with Arabia there, with Saudi Arabia and all that country over there. I think it quit too quick. I think they had the sword all right, but didn't they use it negligently? Didn't they give up and quit before they really should have? I think so. And so if God's going to use a nation as the sword in his hand to execute his judgment, then that nation ought to execute the judgment to the full. Cursed is he that doeth the work of Jehovah negligently. Cursed is he that keepeth back his sword from blood. That's what the first, I think, is a principle. I will lay that principle will be just as true of us. God has given us a work in his kingdom. Now, but can I afford to do it negligently, half-heartedly? This big author that I'm, the book I'm trying to read, I had a hard time reading it, but in that book I'm trying to read it, he points out there God's great power and universal power and control and all that. And that he is the one, and that what the world has done today not altogether rejected God, but neglected God. Half of the world, or men of our nation, has rejected God. I'd say the other half has neglected God. We're doing his work negligently, just sort of ignoring him, going along just about like it. We're doing our own thing here instead of looking to God. Now class the point that I'm trying to make in studying this book of Jeremiah is that God doesn't change. The same principle by which he operated back there toward his people and toward heathen nations are the same principles on which he acts today toward his people and toward the nations. So we can no more afford to do the work negligently, indifferently, than they could back there. But I think this man is correct when he points out how that the world is rejecting God and the rest of them is more or less ignoring God. We are leaving him out of our thinking. He doesn't have the place that he ought to have that. Think about that. Give that some thought, because I think these are principles that we need to learn. Let me hasten me on now. I have that one marked. If I have you, I've had that one marked in my Bible for a long time. That passage of verse 10. And I said, Moab, now here's a second charge against it. Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he hath settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel, neither hath he gone into captivity. Therefore his taste remaineth in him, and his scent is not changed. And that's a figure from wine making. Now here, you take the grape juice and put it in vessels, and then later on you pour it into another vessel. Leave it, the lees or the settlings there. You leave it hard. You let it settle along. Then you pour it again. After a while, you've got the purest, the best of wine. Now, Moab has settled upon her lees. She hadn't been poured from vessel to vessel. Therefore, she becomes sickly and syrupy and no good. Now then, what's God going to do? He's not only going to pour out, but he's going to break the bottles. They're going to jostle them around until Moab is completely broken. And this is a figure from wine making. I don't know enough about it except what I've read, but this is the way it's done, and you have to pour it back and forth, and you get the very purest and best. All right, now that the poor wine is generally given to the poor people use that. But at any rate here, and you haven't been emptied from vessel to vessel. Therefore, you haven't suffered anything at the hands of others. So you have grown then to be at ease. You're at ease now. You're settled on your lees. Well, a nation, I don't think it ought to have war to learn it, but in the midst of war, we learn some things. But we should learn these lessons and avoid the consequences of becoming at ease, no longer concerned about things, taking God for granted, ignoring Him generally, and acting like that. You're going to pay the price. Well, I don't know what it said. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Jehovah, that I will send unto him them that pour off, and they shall pour him off, and they shall empty his vessels, and break their vessels in pieces. All right, now who is that? What is that? What figure is that? That's the coming of the Babylonians. They'll pour them out, and more than that, they'll break their vessel. They'll break the nation completely. And it's a figure that the people that day would thoroughly understand, because they made the wine and all of that, but we may not today. And Moab shall be ashamed of Chemosh, that is her god, as the house of Israel was ashamed of Bethel, their confidence. That's the house of Israel to the north, that when the kingdom divided, Jeroboam the first set up a golden calf at Bethel and another one at Dan, and the people worshiped that. And you remember that in our study sometime when we talked about that divided kingdom there, the kingdom was divided at that time, and the northern tribes existed 200 years but never had a faithful king, a king faithful to Jehovah in the whole 200 years. They were all idolaters. They all followed the path of Jeroboam and worshiped the golden calf at Bethel. Right now then, when Assyria invaded them and they called upon the calf at Bethel, what did it answer? It didn't answer. What happened to it? It was carried away by the Assyrians into captivity, the captivity of the people there, as a part of the spoils of war. So they were ashamed of it because it didn't help them. So you'll be ashamed of Chemosh. They won't be able to help you. And so if we trust in the wrong things, well, and it fails, we'll be ashamed of that. Our nation falls as a result of debt and overspending and all that economically, brings about its destruction. Well, we'll be ashamed of the way that we wasted, we trusted in money, paper money, that had nothing to back it up. We'll be ashamed of it. And the only one God is going to save us, and that's Jehovah. And we want to learn that. How say ye, we are mighty? We are mighty men and valiant men for the war. Moab is laid waste, and they are gone up into the cities, and his chosen young men are gone down to the slaughter. Some of them went up to the city on the hill, others went down to fight the enemy, and they were slaughtered. Except the king, whose name is Jehovah of hosts. Well, I had already said, King, O thou King of the nations, back in the 10th chapter of Jeremiah. Now he says that God's a king now, and the king whose name is Jehovah has gone down to the slaughter. For God's going to be the king that'll see that they're destroyed. He's in control. The calamity of Moab is near to come, and his affliction hasteth fast. All ye that are round about him bemoan him, and all ye that know his name say, how is the strong staff broken, the beautiful rod? This nation that has stood for so long, hadn't had all the problems of others, how is it destroyed? How terrible the destruction. O thou daughter that dwellest in Dibon, come down from thy glory and sit in thirst. For the destroyer of Moab is come up against thee. He hath destroyed thy stronghold. The stronghold of Dibon will be destroyed. You'll be dying of thirst and help from God, and you'll have none. O inhabitant of Aroer, stand ye, stand by the way and watch. Ask him that fleeth and her that escapeth say, what have been done? That is another one of the towns. Now the people fly by fleeing from this anywhere to get away from the Babylonians. What's happened? I was going to come to them too. Moab is put to shame, for it is broken down. Wail and cry, tell ye it by the Arnon, that's the river there, that Moab is laid waste, and judgment is come upon the plain country, upon Holon, and upon Jaza, and upon Mephathath, and upon Dibon, and upon Nebo, and upon Beth Diblaim, and upon Kirathaim, and upon Beth Gamel, and upon Beth Mim, all these towns. I don't know what to call the name, we don't know where they are. Bozrah, that was one of the chief cities there. And all the cities of the land, Moab, far and near, the horn of Moab is cut off, and his arm is broken, says Jehovah. Right? The horn is a symbol of strength, symbol of power. And so now that's cut off. Power is gone. Her cities are being destroyed. The citizens are fleeing and getting out of there as fast as they can. Right? Next he talks about the pride that deceived them. Make ye him drunkard, for he magnifieth himself against Jehovah, and shall wallow in his vomit, and he shall be in derision. All right, now there's another reason why now. You notice now? Because she magnified herself against Jehovah. Right? In trying to destroy the Israelites, they were actually after their God. They wanted to destroy the concept of their God. And so now that they, because he says here, you've magnified yourself against God, you've been drunk on your own power, you're going to wallow in the vomit of your fall from that power. And in the book of Habakkuk that deals with that, Nebuchadnezzar was drunk on power, he fell. Moab was drunk on power, he fell. I think our nation gets a little bit intoxicated sometimes, the idea of its great power. Well, that's going to bring it to destruction one of these days. For was not Israel a derision unto thee? You see, it was against God there, drunken there, for magnified against Jehovah. For your being against Israel was a derision unto thee. Was he found among thieves? For as often as thou speakest of him, thou waggest the head. In other words, when you speak of Israel, you wag your head in derision. So you're talking about a thief. They didn't rob you of your land. They didn't take anything you had. They went around when they came out from Egypt, went clear around you, and entered the land from the north of Moab. God wouldn't have let them attack Moab. O ye inhabitants of Moab, leave the cities and dwell in the rock, and be like the dove that maketh her nest over the mouth of the abyss, where you can escape and be away. We have heard of the pride of Moab, that he is very proud, his loftiness and his pride and his arrogancy. All right, now that's the fourth of these cause of a fall, her pride. Right? She exalted herself. She was against God. She was very proud. All of these things lead to destruction. Pride goes before destruction. A haughty spirit before fall. So you can't trust in yourself. Our pride, our arrogance in this country, our leaving God out of our thinking, our exalting our own self, self-reliant, we don't need God. All that, what's that going to do to us? Bring us to the same destruction about Moab and about all the rest of them. When? I don't know. How and what way God will use? I don't know. Don't know how he'll do it. Don't know when he'll do it. I do know one thing. I'm as confident that he will do it as I am that the Bible is the Word of God. So it's coming some of these days. And I think we've been asking for it. We've been working toward that end, so God will gratify that ultimate end there. Still hurrying on. Heard the pride of it. Mark that one. Haughtiness. I know his wrath, said Jehovah, that it is naught. Yes, he loses his temper, high temper, get angry, wrathful, and going to destroy. But he's not able to do what he thought he could do there. His boastings have wrought nothing. Therefore I wail for Moab, yea, I will cry out for all Moab. For the men of Kirhereth shall they mourn. With more than the weeping of Jezreel will I weep for thee, O vine of Sibmah. The vine of Sibmah was a type of grape, very fruitful and luxuriant. All right, now, and this was the land, this was a section of the country where that grew. And so he speaks of the area where they grew this particular vine and made the best of the wine and all that. He speaks of it as Sibmah there, as a vine, because it was, that was the thing for which it was noted. Thy branches passed over the sea and reached even to the sea of Jezreel, what that was, upon the summer fruits and upon thy vintage, the destroyer is fallen. So those of you boasted and were proud of your grapes and the fine wine and sold the seedlings and clippings to other nations and all that, you're going to be brought to naught. So they're going to come down. And gladness and joy is taken away from the fruitful field from the land of Moab. The fruitful vineyard and field of Sibmah, that's going to be destroyed. And I have caused wine to cease from the wine presses. None shall tread with shouting. Shouting shall be no shouting. From the city of Heshbon, even unto even unto Jahaz, have they uttered their voice from Zoar, even unto Horonaim, to Eglath Shelishiah, for the waters of Nimrod also shall be become desolate. Moreover, I will cause to cease in Moab, saith Jehovah, him that offereth in the high place, and him that burneth incense to his gods. God's going to bring the whole thing on. This seems to us like a lot of repetition and all that. He could just say the whole of Moab. But God's taking it city by city, as the Babylonians would take it city by city. Destroy this one, and the next one, and the next one, and so on there. All right? Therefore, now here's the lamentation that was made, a great lamentation. Therefore my heart soundeth for Moab like pipes, and my heart soundeth like pipes for the men of Kirhereth. Therefore the abundance that he hath gotten shall perish. Now Isaiah said about the same thing. This destruction of Moab is going to be so terrible that it even caused the prophets to prophesy of what was going to come. It caused them to lament and to cry their lamentation over it. It's going to be so terrible when it comes. Show the sympathy of these men. Sometimes we think they sound a little harsh and hard, but they weren't. They were only speaking the word of God. God's judgments are always righteous judgments. They're always judgment that the destruction of the wicked in a judgment. Also, it means the deliverance of the righteous from the influence and opposition and oppression of the wicked. So, judgment is not only against the wicked, it's in behalf of the righteous. We may suffer along with the judgment that comes, but at the same time, it will deliver us from the temptation of that which led them into their rebellion against God. Try to think of judgments like that as trying to think about your own personal trials and testing. Count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, said James. Alright, and he moves on now from that. Then he says, after having it everywhere, a little further, for every head is bald and every beard is clipped, upon all the hands are cuttings, and upon the loins sackcloth. on all the housetops of Moab and in the streets thereof, there is lamentation everywhere. For I have broken Moab like a vessel wherein none delighted, saith Jehovah. It's a vessel nobody delights in it. It's a foul vessel. It contains a bad stuff. It's broken. Why? The only people who lament over it are those that are the losers and the individuals whose sympathy is aroused at the terribleness of the judgment. Oh, just a little bit more now. The lamentation on the house. How is it broken down? How do they wail? How hath Moab turned back with shame? So shall Moab become a derision and a terror to all that around about him. For thus saith Jehovah, behold, he shall fly as an eagle and shall spread out his wings against Moab. That is the God will. God in judgment. Kirioth is broken and the strongholds are seized. And the heart of the mighty men of Moab, that day shall be as the heart of a woman in her pangs. And Moab shall be destroyed from being a people because he had magnified himself against Jehovah. He repeats the one that he made up there a while ago. Of course, he magnifies himself against Jehovah in verse 26. That's repeated. So four things there that God says there against him. I want to look at these if I may. Here the first one is, back in verse 7, for because thou hast trusted in thy works and thy treasures, thou also shall be taken. That's the first one. All right, now the second one is over here in verse 11. Moab hath been at ease from his youth, and he hath settled on his lees, and hath not been emptied from vessel to vessel. Hadn't had any problems there, anything there to cause them to change, all that. Then the third one over here, we mentioned was in 29, we have heard of the pride of Moab, and now in this one, he had magnified himself against Jehovah. Those four things there, I think we ought to, give a little study to those and think about them, because that would cause any nation to fall, and we're right along in that line. Now let me just finish this up. Fear and the pit and the snare are upon the old inhabitant of Moab, saith Jehovah. He that fleeth from the fear shall fall into the pit, and he that getteth up out of the pit shall be taken in the snare. So if you try to escape one way, you'll be caught another way. There will be no escape, saith God. I will bring upon him, even upon Moab, the year of their visitation, said Jehovah. They that fled stand without strength under the shadow of Heshbon. For a fire is gone forth out of Heshbon, and a flame from the midst of Sihon, and had devoured the corner of Moab, and the crown of the head of the mountains, tumultuous ones. Woe unto thee, O Moab! People of Chemosh is undone, for thy sons are taken away captive, and thy daughters into captivity. Now, here's a ray of hope. Here's a ray of hope. Yet will I bring back the captivity of Moab in the latter days, said Jehovah. Thus far is the judgment of God. That is under the Messiah. That's a messianic promise there. Now, we have no record of that, but we know that God did what he said he would do. For when the church was scattered in Jerusalem, they went everywhere preaching the word. So they went out throughout the lands. No doubt they went down into ancient Moab or wherever the Moabites might have been. Only God knows that. Now, I don't try to find places for that. If God said that he'll give them a chance to change, he will. If he said he would, I know he did. So somewhere along the line, but that's messianic. That was never fulfilled. The latter days always referred to the messianic period. So here then is a ray of hope in the midst of the darkest of gloom, but to be realized only in Jesus Christ. And so it is today with us. Whatever calamity may face us, the only hope we have is in Jesus Christ the Lord. And yet people honor him in a way today that dishonors him. And what we do today is not the kind of honor that God wants. What God wants is us to do his will, the will of his Son. And that brings what we're looking for. Well, I realize that reading this chapter would maybe have been a little bit boring. But what I wanted you to see, what I reiterated, I want us to see the judgment that was to come to terribleness of it, and the four causes of it. They trusted in themselves. They were haughty toward Jehovah. And they became indifferent to that. They trusted in themselves, their own works. These are things where a man trusts in himself and elevates himself and material things as his God, is doomed to go down in destruction. So we're headed in that direction unless somehow people can be turned back to God. And I don't see any hope for that. I don't see any indication of that. Do you? I personally don't. That's the only thing can save us. All right, class excuse, we'll take up the next chapter next time. That deals here with the children of Ammon, and then Edom, those neighbors, those who were close by, the neighbors there. And so Ammon is this one up here. We'll take Ammon, and next time up here, and then down here is Edom, down here, we'll take Edom. So we're taking these nations round about Jerusalem. The judgment is going to come on Judah, but it affects all neighboring countries as well. Class excuse.